Today on the Learner Podcast, we're joined by Maria Gianferrari, author of Play Like an Animal. Thank you for joining us today, Maria.
Thanks for having me, Rachel. I appreciate it.
Why do you write the kinds of books that you write?
Well, generally, I write about what I love, things that are inspiring. Most of my books are about animals or creatures in the natural world. And I grew up in a small town in New Hampshire, across the street from a farm. So my mother used to ring the bell when it was time for us to come in. And I used to slap cow patties for fun and climb trees. And we had a sugar house across the street from us. So I was always, basically, nature was my playground. So I was outside all the time playing, rain or shine, pretty much. And so I think that inspired me to be a writer in many ways. I'm a shy person, and being out in nature is the place that I feel most comfortable.
Where do you get the information for your books?
So basically the same kind of thing, like things that I might be passionate about or curious about, things that I see in nature or here. For example, my book Coyote Moon was inspired by an actual coyote encounter when I used to live in Waltham, Massachusetts. And then I kind of became obsessed with coyotes and had to learn everything I could. So I interviewed a scientist and did a bunch of reading. And my book Terrific Tongues was inspired by my then toddler's obsession with tongues. We were living in Germany at the time. And so the German word for tongue is Zunge. And everywhere we went, my daughter, you know, she'd see a dog walking on the street and she'd say, Zunge. Or we'd be reading a book and she'd point to the tongue, Zunge. So I started to think about tongues. And then I found a wealth of information that was so cool and interesting that it inspired that book.
How did you become a writer in the first place?
Well, writing was something I really always wanted to do. And it's, you know, there's a lot of failure involved first from just rejections, getting rejections from editors. But even it starts even earlier, you know, when you're meeting with your critique group and they don't like something. So I think that by the time my daughter was born and I was reading children's books again and realizing how much I love them, I just thought, you know, what am I waiting for? You know, time is passing on and I'm not actually trying. So, you know, I was, I think, afraid to fail. And then not even trying. So then I actually started to try. And yes, there was still failure involved, but then eventually there was success. And just the fun part is, you know, learning about different things and being inspired and, you know, having a critique group that supports you as well. So it's kind of, there's still rejection involved and still failure, but luckily, I've had some external validation, so that kind of helps you go as well. But also the passion and the obsession and the curiosity is another thing that keeps me going.
Children's books are so short. How do you pack so much information and emotion into a limited word count?
I think really, for me, poetry is key to writing picture books because you're distilling the language to its most essential parts in a poem, and you're sort of doing the same thing as a writer of picture books because you want to leave enough space for the illustrator as well. And so that white space can create emotion and tension. And it also leaves a place for the reader to reflect and pause. And I think, you know, with my nonfiction books that are sort of scientific and that nature-based, that science and poetry really go hand in hand also. And scientific language can also be poetic. For example, in my book, Hawk Rising, there's a term when hawks are flying in the sky and kind of hovering, they fold their wings, and it's called kiting, which is very poetic. You know, imagine a kite sort of flying in the sky. And so it's technically accurate, and yet it's also kind of poetic and beautiful in the same way. So it's really, I think, an interesting way to approach writing and the writing of picture books specifically.
You've touched on this a little bit. How do you choose the specific subjects for your books?
And it's, yeah, a little bit about, you know, what I'm curious about. I might see something and say, oh, that's an interesting creature, or, you know, observing. I remember driving my daughter to school, and there used to be a tree where these hawks would hang out. And one morning I saw this hawk just holding its wings out, and I wondered what it was doing. And then, you know, I did some research and found out that that's, they sometimes dry dew from their wings. So that made it into the scene of hawk rising. So it's, I think it's just, yeah, again, what I'm curious about and passionate about. And then, you know, you get a little bit sort of obsessive as well, as I did with my, you know, coyote book, just trying to find out as much as you can. And I think that obsession and passion and energy keeps you going despite the constant failure, because it's out there and unavoidable. And so when you have that interest and obsession feeling, that can be helpful.
What was your inspiration for Play Like an Animal?
I think I was, you know, on one hand, I was seeing in schools the emphasis on testing, and had even heard at some schools that, you know, recess was being eliminated for efficiency purposes, you know, so we can drill even more information into kids. And I just thought, oh, you're kind of like missing the point. You know, play can be fun, but it's also educational. There's so many things that you learn, you know, your curiosity about something, experimenting with things, taking them apart, putting them together, you know, that's Legos, building stuff. And so I think it was, you know, part of it was wanting to inspire play and making it sort of legitimizing it in a way, as an educational thing, but also just it is fun. So I think the idea of trying to sort of combat the you know, worksheets. My daughter, when she went to public school, she was in a Montessori school for a while, so it was a little bit different. And she went to public school, and she was getting worksheets to do for science. And I thought, my God, that's like the antithesis of science. Science is experimenting and exploration and hands-on kind of stuff. So I guess I wanted to inspire kids to get out and be active and that sort of thing.
What is the most surprising thing that you discovered while researching this book?
I think one of the most surprising things was that animals in captivity play a lot. And it really makes sense, because they're not, you know, on one hand, I'm not a huge fan of zoos. I get their educational purpose, and it's helping to perpetuate a lot of species. But as an animal lover, it makes me feel sad to visit zoos and see animals that are enclosed. But, you know, zookeepers and the scientists that work there are trying to help animals as well. And so one of the things they do is to stimulate them, is to put toys in and play with them. And so animals in captivity are extremely playful, and it makes sense because they're not worried about their safety. They're not worried about finding food. Those things are taken care of. And so I think it was something that I had never really thought of, but it makes perfect sense. And it also makes sense with people too, when kids are on a schedule, or when kids, maybe you don't have a lot of resources available to you, that, you know, playing can seem like it's a privilege, though it should be a right that everybody has, if that makes any kind of sense. And so, that was the kind of interesting thing. And I guess I've been thinking about it a lot now when we're, you know, during this time of COVID, when people are inside, you know, they might have more, if they have a safe space, you know, that's really important. And the part of privilege too, is if you don't really have a safe space inside, you can't play in the same way that you might be able to if you do. But if you do, you know, I think boredom can be one thing that can inspire play too, and creativity. You know, you just have to, there has to be that opportunity to have time to be bored and to tinker with things that you might not have if you're on a constant schedule with, you know, sports or with classes that you are enrolling your kids in and things like that.
I have noticed that very much. So I agree, during the pandemic times. Mm-hmm. I have small children, and their play got really creative in the first couple of months when it was still winter here in Minnesota. And, you know, they played outside, but they couldn't play outside all day. Yeah. Now that it's summer, they're outside much more often. But the creativity that came out of, there's nothing else to do, but you're safe at home, so go find something.
Right.
Really.
A bunch of boxes. Make something out of them, though, you know.
The salad spinner. The salad spinner disappeared from my kitchen, and it has not come back.
Right. And kids don't need expensive toys. So that was, you know, you just need some spoons and some boxes and some, you know, Legos and blocks, and you can do wonders with that. And of course, you know, for kids that are kind of more artistic, crayons and paper.
Many of those things you described are the same kinds of toys they give to the animals in the zoo, boxes and right. balls and things to knock down.
Yes. And they have a grand old time.
Right.
So, yeah. And just also observing creatures, you know, playing with, so, you know, watching animals play brings a lot of joy.
Right.
You know, your household's pets, whether it's, you know, your cat that you're teasing with a toy, or your dog that you're playing tug of war with or something like that. It's a lot of fun and just relaxing as well.
Right. You had sent us a link to some zoo animals playing in the snow from the Animal Channel, which we will put in the podcast notes. So anyone who's listening can go and get a little.
I love snow. I think snow just, you know, I feel like a kid when it snows out, and I want to go out and play. And I remember, right. you know, my dog Becca, whenever there was snow on the ground, you know, she'd start like dragging her jaw, eating it, and then, you know, immediately wanting to roll in it. And it's just fun. And of course, building forts and snow people and all that kind of stuff too.
Well, if any of our listeners have not yet checked out Play Like an Animal, you can see a short excerpt on our website, learnerbooks.com, and the book is available wherever books are sold now. Thank you so much, Maria, for joining us today.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye.